This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 7th of December, 2021. Markets really in recovery mode. There's some key support that was found in the U.S. markets. We looked at that 15,700 level in the NASDAQ 100 yesterday, and that survived the sort of equivalent level in the S&P 500, as you can see on our chart on slide two. Sort of slipped a bit, the prior high there from back in early September, but rebounding strongly. And suddenly we're already looking back at the 21-day moving average coming into view, also coincides with about the 61.8% retracement, arguably the key local and tactical resistance there. And some of the news leading to this broad rebound, at least overnight, with new signs from China after a Politburo meeting that they're looking at easing up on the crackdown on the property market. Some of the prior language was sort of eliminated from the new meetings or the signals after the new meeting, and a pledge to stabilize the economy next year. So, Peter, pretty broad-based recovery overnight here. What are you looking at as you're looking at this equity market rebound?
Yeah, you can see on slide two in our tables overview of our different theme baskets that the best performers have been travel and payments, which is a direct response to the positive news flows we're getting on Omicron that we shouldn't be too worried about its virulence on against kids, and it's also the numbers are not accelerating recently in South Africa. Actually, they're coming down a little bit. So the news flow is positive, and that's positive to those two baskets, and also the commodity sector, which had initially been taking a blow due to Omicron, is also coming back. So I think that's basically it for today. I mean, and we could potentially see a continuation of short-term momentum pushing the indices higher. I'm looking for that 40, 46, 45 level in the S&P 500, which you have highlighted as well, because of that positive news flow. And but still, I think the key risk for later this week, obviously, is the U.S. inflation report. But today, I think people are enjoying the positive news flow. And as you said, China, which is not to be forgotten, it's the second largest economy. So any stimulus coming from that economy will add positively to the to equities.
Yeah, and of course, we have the seasonality, the so-called Santa rally, which we all know is often there seasonally. It's been a bit of a miss this year, some of it, but there's been a lot of news flow, more hawkish Fed turn. We've had the Omicron variant, et cetera. So mentioning that seasonal aspect reasserts. And I would argue that the key risk going into year end is the year end itself. Of course, the calendar rule is critical, but also that FOMC meeting, how the market absorbs sort of the crystallization of that hawkish turn in terms of the new dot plot from the Fed, et cetera, and the accompanying materials. And on that note, I'll tell you, on the fixed income market and the Treasury yield curve, we've talked a lot about this, how we've seen this aggressive flattening, the market sort of predicting the Fed really can't get that high in terms of its eventual terminal policy rate. And the very long end of the curve, just not playing ball with the idea that we're in some robust, robust outlook in terms of longer term recovery. So any new impressions from the fixed income market yesterday?
Well, yesterday, actually, we had the yield curve steepening slightly. But I want to take you first to slide number three, where I look at the yield curve at the end of last week and what happened, that we have seen basically the fastest flattening of the yield curve in basically almost 10 years since June 2012. The spread between 10 years and 2 years dropped around 21 basis points. And the reason for that is that while the front part of the yield curve yields remain sustained, on the long part of the yield curve, last week, yields dropped. And the reason why they dropped is that there was a lot of uncertainty regarding Omicron and obviously an economic slowdown ahead. However, yesterday, we have seen a reversal of this trend. We have seen the 10-year yields moving 10 basis points higher, the steepening of the yield curve has been caused mainly by the news that it doesn't look that Omicron is causing more hospitalization than before, and also that China cut the reverse requirement rate And it's adopting an accommodative stance going forward. So that's positive for both news are actually positive for future growth. And that's why we see the long part of the yield curve hedging higher. So basically the big take here, John, is that going forward, the long-term yields remain very dependent on COVID distortions. And as soon as we have fears easing around that, we should see the long part of the yield curve pricing higher than where we see now, for the simple reason that the Federal Reserve looks very likely to accelerate the pace of tapering and engaging in interest rate hikes early next year.
All right. And I have some thoughts on what that could mean for the dollar in a moment. But I just want to look briefly at the junk bond market, because this was a critical market recently. We saw some developments that we hadn't seen in a while. We actually saw the spreads for junk widening, and quite notably relative to the prior months and relative to the whole Delta cycle with the virus, et cetera. But it looks like this development as well is reversing to a degree, a pretty strong sign, I guess, of stronger risk appetite at the moment, at least.
Absolutely. So in slide number four, you look at the percentage total return on junk bonds in the US. This is the weekly percentage change. And what happened last week is that junk bonds gained the most in the 3 months. And as you can see in the graph, it was one of the highest gains that we had throughout 2021. The reason for that is that junk bonds have much less duration than investment grade bonds. They have less than half of the duration. And obviously, if the market expects high inflation and higher interest rates, it makes sense that in order to create that buffer, they have to find yield with limiting as much as they can the duration part. So, John, at this point, I think that maybe we are not going to see much weakness out of junk bonds, but we should concentrate on our other risky assets. And for example, leverage loans. We have a lot of companies now issuing leverage loans to close the year. And we had yesterday another pushback on leverage loan for, the second pushback from investors on a leverage loan in around 2 days, because investors are now very selective with risk. So it looks very likely that if something is happening with risky assets, it will be happening in the leverage loan space.
Right. And then as I alluded to earlier, I'm wondering if the dollar is at risk of rolling over to the downside. I may be too early on this. I think next week's FOMC meeting is a really critical inflection point for this idea. Again, if we see the crystallization of the Fed in terms of, or the Fed outlook in terms of the dot plot being adjusted higher, more hawkish feel, of course, in the statement and in Powell's press conference, which we've already gotten a taste of really with his testimony. Are we sort of at the peak of this turn in expectations, especially relative to other currencies? We are going to see less fiscal from the U.S. next year, even if we do get this package passed, the so-called reconciliation bill. If we are seeing the U.S. Going forward and growth look out improving because of the savings by consumer after they stored a lot of that stimulus from the pandemic response, dollar liquidity should be good if a bank lending is up. And even in a more negative scenario, this is not good, because then the Fed will, in other words, that's the positive scenario for the U.S. economic outlook. The negative scenario would be if the U.S. economy turns lower with that fiscal drag and with more conservative behavior. And then we see those Fed rate hikes being priced back out. So positive or negative, I'm wondering if we're sort of as extended as we're going to get. And I think if we are in a more positive scenario, that the Fed is simply going to be responding to inflation, not sort of leading the charge relative to other central banks. So I put up a Bloomberg U.S. dollar index chart on slide 5. You can have a look at that. And we've seen pretty tepid price action here. This dollar index is less euro dollar heavy than the normal dollar index. Of course, the first step would be a break below that 1180 and a close below that 1180 level you can see there. And we really need to get, you know, let's call it 2% lower to sort of suggest that we're biting back below the upward sloping trend line here. But just some food for thought. Could be early on this. It could be something more for the first quarter of next year. But I'm wondering if we see an inflection point over the coming weeks and into the new year. And then finally, to round out the FX space, looking at Aussie dollar, big bounce off that huge 70 level we mentioned recently. A lot of that, of course, on the very strong improvement here, risk appetite, as well as the Chinese stimulus hopes and the iron ore price recovery. And the RBA, the Reserve Bank of Australia statement overnight, a bit more positive, especially on wages, where the language was slightly upgraded in the statement. This has Aussie surging back higher, but you can see how much work needs to be done to sort of reverse that very significant and persistent slide we've seen from well above 75. But just noticing in the FX board and the latest trend readings from FX, you can see all those positive momentum readings for the smaller G10 currency. So, of course, the FX space also seeing this resurgence in risk appetite. And then, Ola, just on oil briefly, of course, with Omicron fears fading, we are seeing the oil price rebounding. But goodness, when you look at the charts, there is quite a significant slide that needs to be retraced before we can sort of neutralize that recent move.
That's true, John. But first of all, for now, it's doing some decent work here. We're back above the 200-day moving average, which we mentioned a couple of times recently as the first line in the sand that needed to be taken out. We broke that yesterday, and with the Omicron news of fading worries, basically giving it an additional lift. Just from the helicopter perspective, so I have here on this on slide 8, basically you can see this is the rally we had from the vaccine news announcement in November last year. And that whole run-up, we basically corrected to 38.2. So even though it was a very, very dramatic correction we've seen, it was still relatively small on a larger time frame. So so that gives the market potentially some additional input to the upside. What you have to keep in mind as well, just recently and during the past 2 months, we've seen quite a significant amount of selling from hedge funds. They're holding the smallest position in more than a year. So as the technical and as the technical outlook changes, we potentially could see a renewed appetite from that group. So that's worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and then you bring up the coffee market, and I find this is where commodities really show their unique pricing structure relative to other assets. When you have these, you have to consider the forward curve, whether you want to go long coffee or whether you want to go short coffee. And of course, coffee has been backing up, and you're putting in some very long-term charts here showing how high the spot price is relative, or at least the spot month price is relative to prior cycles. But the difficulty here is that people are pricing that back, pricing the forward market to be much cheaper. So it's also people need to be aware of, it's difficult to short a market when there is this tremendous slope in the forward curve. I've probably taken too much out of what you wanted to say there, but further thoughts on what's putting coffee up here so high?
No, that's actually exactly it, John, because for the past 5 years, coffee has probably been the most attractive commodity to short, because of the negative role. It basically means if you're holding a short, you're selling every month, you're buying back an expiring contract, selling the next one at a higher price. Selling at a higher price. That's contango, where when you have oversupplied markets. And that basically gave short sellers a yield pickup throughout the last half a decade. One of the reasons why every time we saw a bounce in coffee was quite quickly smacked back down again, because short sellers emerged. That situation has now turned around because the fundamentals on the ground has turned increasingly tight. We are seeing weather worries related to Brazil and Colombia, two of the world's biggest exporters, especially Brazil. The frost damage we had earlier this year potentially could reduce the crop both next year and the following. And that's really something the market is now starting to take note of. And you can see on the chart, we are hitting a decade high. We are looking at that $3 a pound level back in 2011. And Devon as a potential next area, but this is really a market where supplies are driven by increasingly tight supplies.
All right, an interesting market to watch, and always fascinated by the commodity markets when the forward curve gets as stretched as it does. Let's turn back to the equity market, Peter. There's some interesting individual stories, and one of the largest and most traded stocks of all, Tesla, which is on the last one on your stocks to watch today list on slide 9. Huge intraday volatility and that 1,000 level falling, but then managing to close back above it on the news of the SEC probe. How serious do you think that is?
Well, it has been proposed before that there has been defects on their solar panels. But in this case, the SEC is raising this probe based on a whistleblower that has put forward evidence that Tesla has ignored the internal concerns that there could be a risk of fire from these defects on their solar panels. So that's it. I mean, the news flow has been negative for quite some time in Tesla, also with Elon Musk selling almost $10 billion worth of shares to cover tax liabilities associated with exercising stock options that he got many years ago. But the rebound in Tesla, let's see about that. I also found it pretty interesting to watch or read the news bits from his interview yesterday, where basically he told employees in Austin at their factory that he didn't think that Biden should go ahead, with the subsidies and for different various part of electric vehicle infrastructure and, basically delivering subsidies to the electric vehicle industry. And I think that's quite an irony, given that how much subsidies Tesla have got through the years, and now that they are profitable and a private company, he doesn't want more competition and entrance and subsidies. And then I think one of the other stocks I want to mention is MongoDB. We mentioned it yesterday as being part of this growth pocket in US equities, and had taken quite a bruising over the past 2 weeks. Shares were up 18% in extended trading yesterday, so going back all the way above 500 again. They beat on revenue and they lifted their revenue guidance for the fiscal year. They delivered their Q3 yesterday. So very strong earnings from and not strong earnings, because they actually still losing money on an accounting earnings terms, but they are narrowing that loss, and it's driven by this high revenue growth. And then we should also just mention quickly Alibaba, because it's one of the largest technology stocks in China, and it responded very positively to the stimulus talks coming out of China, up 12% in Hong Kong session. So that's definitely something to watch as well if you are trading the US listing. But nevertheless, Alibaba has been down so much that the last two trading sessions might tell you that there is a short-term rebound going on in Alibaba. So for the trader, there's potential opportunities here.
Right. And then on the earnings outlook, as you said, we're pretty much drying up in terms of interesting companies reporting. I see a couple names, though, there that are interesting. One of them, the meme stock, GameStop. Is there any gravity for the story, the fundamental story there, or what's going on and something like that?
I don't think GameStop, it will take years to materialize any meaningful improvement in their operations, but they're getting a very long leash by the crowd that have propped up their stock price. So let's see about that. I think UiPath is an interesting one, because it sits inside AI and data, so it's one of those companies, and I think it's owned by ARK Invest as well. So we're definitely going to talk about that tomorrow. But today is only AutoZone, which is probably a very boring retailer of auto parts and repairs of cars. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to move away from the do-it-yourself segment being the majority part of the business. I think it's around 80% of the business now, was 90% 10 years ago, and they're moving in the direction of the more professional market. But as you can see in the numbers that we have put in here on slide 10, I mean, this is a company that needs to find some growth. It's really not moving a lot, and it's not expected to move a lot in terms of growth over the next year. It's probably in real terms going to shrink if these nominal revenue growth numbers are to hold.
Wow. Okay. And on the economic calendar for today, on slide 11, not earth-shattering stuff or earth-shaking stuff, we have the German ZEW survey, as we're looking at the degree to which this power and energy crunch is hitting Europe. And of course, we have natural gas prices up once again this morning. A key to note, it's an important day for this issue over Russian troops massed on the Ukrainian border, with U.S. President Biden and President Putin of Russia to meet today in a summit. And the latest news is that the U.S. is waving around as its form of leverage in this situation the threats to sanction basically the Russian financial system. So everything from limiting foreign exchange transactions by Russian banks to Looking at the forbidding investment in the secondary market for Russian assets, especially Russian government bonds. And then there's the so-called nuclear option of disabling Russian ability to access the SWIFT payment system, which would really be a powerful tool because it would essentially shut Russia out of the international the international payment system. And that's would be extremely disruptive. So interesting to see, and something we need to track is just with this, whatever delta it has, this important geopolitical risk we have at the moment hanging over Europe and hanging over essentially global markets if things go wrong. Other data and reminding us of potentially the US dollar negative story, which for some reason hasn't been so far, that current account deterioration in the US with the latest trade balance news for the US. And then the rest of the week, Canadian Bank of Canada announcement tomorrow, the Chinese CPI and PPI especially as an important global inflation gauge, and the U.S. November CPI up on Friday as an important one as well as we head into next week's really critical FOMC meeting, as mentioned earlier. Okay, that's a wrap for today. Stay careful out there. Let's see how things develop, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.